jump on the fake stuff. Everybody else is fast.
They've been fake the whole time.
No, I don't think Arby's is going to jump on that one. We have the meats.
We have the meats.
All right, well, calling the Tuesday, September 10th, 2019, Central Marin Sanitation Agency board meeting to order. Stand and say the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, then we take a roll call, please. Excuse me.
Commissioner Giovanni?
Here.
Commissioner Borstein?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Kelly?
Here.
Mr. Kelly? Mr. Hilmer?
Here.
Commissioner Bushy?
Here.
And Commissioner Beckman?
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, item three on the agenda is open period for public participation. This is open time for public expression on items within CMSA's jurisdiction and not on the Board of Commissioners' agenda this evening. Anyone in the audience? No, seeing none. We move on to the consent calendar. These items will all be approved in one motion. Is there
a motion?
Second. Okay, all in favor of approving the consent calendar?
Aye.
Aye. Moving on to item five, the alternate retirement plan for temporary and part-time employees. This is a recommendation to adopt a resolution number 339. Jason.
Thank you. Our agency employees are in the CalPERS retirement system, like you guys know. And that was a decision that was made back by the CMSA board probably in the really early 1980s. Right after the GAP was formed, and we started hiring employees. And the decision was, do we participate in Social Security or an alternate system like CalPERS, or do we participate in both? And at that time, some agencies decided, you know, that and before, they decided to stay in Social Security or we'll go into CalPERS, or we'll do both. And some agencies, like Delta Diablo, they have CalPERS and Social Security, so the agency and the employees contribute to both. So we're in CalPERS, and that's been fine for us. And as you know, recently, the board, you guys approved that we would start paying our student interns, high school interns and university interns. So we have a couple on board, and we started paying them. And we also hired a CalPERS retired annuitant, Kent Groves, who was with us for 30 years, and he's retired, seeing CalPERS pension. And with these, temporary employees, we started to withhold, Social Security payroll deductions from them. So we contribute 6.2%. They contribute 6.2% for a total of 12.4%. Now, in Kit's situation, he's already in CalPERS getting a pension, so he's not going to receive any, Social Security benefit, but we're paying into the program, and so is he, because that's the requirement. So after we started paying, the retired annuitant and the interns, which are classified as temporary employees who aren't eligible for CalPERS program, Ken, suggested that maybe we look at an alternate retirement program for the temporary employees, the interns. And Ken has experience with PARS at his many years at Vallejo Sanitation and Flood Control, because they had an OPEB trust fund similar to ours, but ours is with CalPERS, theirs with PARS. So he had experience working with PARS, thought it was a good organization, no issues with it. So he suggests maybe we look into PARS for these temporary employees and the retired annuitant Kit, and potentially other retired annuitants that we hired. He talked a little bit about it, so I said, well, that sounds good, let's take a look at it. So he did that, got some information on PARS, he contacted some of their representatives. It looks like, that it could be beneficial for the agency in terms of we could save a little bit if we don't contribute at the 6.2% level, less than that. And for the employee, it could be beneficial because the withholding from them is pre-tax instead of after-tax, so they take home more, gross net pay than they would otherwise if they're in Social Security. And also the PARS money is a 457B plan that's portable. So if they leave CMSA, which they will because the retired annuitants are here just for certain projects or several months or a year, and the interns are here just for either the summer or maybe a semester or even maybe the summer and a whole year like our current University, Dominican University intern Nick Federley. So I had a much bigger, longer presentation, but I found out today that Mitch Barker is going to be here, and he has a nice presentation for you all. So we handed that out, so I will turn over the presentation to Mitch.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it. Just sit or stand or whatever.
Whatever you're comfortable doing.
Okay, I'll sit. Keep it informal. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Mr. Chair, members of the board. It's a pleasure to be here. I have $2 to live in the Bay Area, so this gives me an opportunity to visit with them as well. If our chairman and founder were here tonight, he would be very excited. This is his favorite program at Parse. He's 95. He can outrow me on the ergonomic machine, and he's as light as it gets. He calls it taking care of the little guy. And back when Congress actually worked together in the early 90s, and this voluminous bill, OBRA 90, buried in that bill was a program for part-time, seasonal, and temporary employees. Prior to that, you didn't have to do anything. But after that, you had to do something. And the choice is either Social Security or a qualifying alternative. And we read the regulations back in 90 when this came out, and we said, this is a book of business we wanted to be in, because it's taking care of, as he thought, the little guy. And we've been in it ever since. So I'm going to give a pretty quick presentation. Interrupt me at any time for questions. On page 2, I wanted to share with you who the three partners are that would bring you this program. PARS, we're known as Trust Administrators, which means that we are bringing you into this program if you adopt, and it's a trust, and it's a it's protected, it's a walled-off trust, and the assets are in there for the benefit of your participants. What does a trust administrator do? You do the record-keeping, the accounting. There's over 250 agencies that have joined the same trust for the same program. It's in California, so we're the number one provider and very proud to be so. So we keep everybody's assets, earnings, liabilities separate. That's really key. Fortunately, with this program, defined contribution, there are no liabilities. But the 115 trust you mentioned, there are liabilities. That's a different program. U.S. Bank is the trustee. So they're the actual custodian of the assets, meaning they hold the money. Highmark Capital is our investment management partner. And their job is to invest these assets at a risk tolerance level that the agency feels comfortable with, and that's a decision to be made down the road. As mentioned, we've been doing this a long time, since 1990, and we have a lot of plans under administration. I picked out just a few in the Bay Area, City of Campbell, where I was earlier today, City of Cupertino, Hayward Area Rec and Park, Housing Authority of City of Alameda, City of Millbrae, where Ken was before, Milpitas, Oraloma Sand District, Mosquito District, and Valley of the Moon Flyers. So quite a few agencies listed on there in the Bay Area. Next page. I gave you a little bit of history, but just as a reminder, this is an alternative to Social Security, and it's only for part-time, seasonal, and temporary employees. And the requirements are, must be under 1,000 hours per year, and you cannot be in CalPERS. Those are the two primary requirements. So once somebody goes over 1,000 hours and they go into CalPERS, they're always in CalPERS after that. Even if they drop back below 1,000 hours, they couldn't come back into our program. They got to stay in CalPERS. The old saying, once in PERS, always in PERS, right? As mentioned, it's a it complies with OBRA 90. That's how this whole program began back in 1990. As Jason mentioned, it is a 457 plan. It's tax-qualified, and it's defined contribution. The beauty of that is it's not a defined benefit, so it can't create unfunded liabilities. So it's like a 401k. So it's a nice benefit. The main benefit to the agency is it reduces cost. As Jason mentioned, you're paying 6.2% in. The employee's paying 6.2% in, total 12.4% for Social Security. The total under this program is 7.5%. And you may break up that contribution split any way you want. I've got two scenarios to show you here shortly. But it must add up to 7.5%. And the participants, just to be clear, no longer would contribute to Social Security while they're in this plan. They still keep all the credits they've accrued. Medicare still keeps going on. But they wouldn't be contributing to Social Security while they're in this plan. Now, once they left the agency and they go on to their next employment, they would be back into Social Security. But this is an alternative, just to make sure we're clear on that. So we've got two contribution splits. The first one is, The employee contributes 375 and the agency contributes 375. Sort of a 50-50 plan. Remember, it's got to add up to 7.5, right? We talked about that. So if you turn to page 5, we see what the numbers look like.
So, Mitch, I have a question. Discussions with Ken, he said that's the minimum contribution level, but if the agency chose, they could contribute more than that, right?
That's correct. Out of our 250, we probably have 10 that contribute more than 7.5.
Okay.
I think 10% total is probably the highest.
Okay.
And so, yes, you can go higher, just can't go lower. So on page 5, if you multiply the payroll, 45,000, you see what the contributions would be on Social Security, the yellow block, $2,790 per year. If you contribute into the RRSP plan, net of all expenses, it would be $1,700, the blue block. So the difference between the two is $1,000. So that's what the savings would be. If you adopt this plan and you adopt a 3.75 strike. The next page is the exciting one to me. Because as my chairman would say, we're taking care of the little guy. He's in a good program and he's getting $360 more take-home pay. Why? It's a pre-tax program versus Social Security being an after-tax program, like Jason mentioned. That's a pretty cool thing. So, again, $360 more in take-home pay. And to a part-timer, I'd say $360 is a lot of money. All right, we have one other contribution split. This is a popular one in Texas. Just learned my new friend back here is also from Texas. And we went to the same university. How's that for a coincidence? Anybody want to know which one?
University of Texas?
Probably not. The other one.
Texas Tech?
Texas A&M.
Third choice.
Yep. So contribution split. Now this one is employee 6-2. So you would leave them right where they are now with Social Security. And the employer, the agency, would drop from 6-2 down to 1.3. Add them up, 7.5. So on page 8, the savings for this one goes up for the agency. So the annual savings would be about $2,100. And the take-home pay on page 9 would go down to about $140. So this is a decision you get to make, either tonight or some other point in time. Page 10, what are the advantages to this program? That top box, 100% immediate vesting. So one day on the job, they own this asset. That's a pretty cool thing. Versus Social Security, you have to get 40 credits. Used to call them quarters, now they call them credits. You can only get 4 per year. So it takes 10 years times 4 to get 240. This, one day on the job, they vest, it's their asset. That's a real nice feature. Number 2, as we talked about, pre-tax versus after-tax. More take-home pay, that's a good thing. And then Jason mentioned portability. It's their money. When they leave, they get to cash out or roll over to any other qualified plan, 401k, 457, 401A, it doesn't matter, they can roll it over. Or they can do a split. They can say, I'll take part cash and I'll take part rollover. We can do that. 5 ways eligible for distribution if they retire, if they terminate, and the 2 unfortunate categories are death or disability. And then the 5th way is if they go from part-time to full-time with this agency, they're eligible for distribution. Those are the 5 ways. We think of this thing as pretty simple. On page 11, the only 3 things that we want the agency to do, and our whole key here is to minimize the burden on staff. Since you've been in the program, Ken, before, I think you can attest to this. We really keep the burden down on staff because we want it to be a simple program. So you send the contributions to the trustee, which is U.S. Bank, instead of sending them to Social Security. So that one's pretty easy. You send us a contribution report. That's how we know who's in the program. There's no enrollment forms. Who's got time to do all that? Just tell us who's in the program with a spreadsheet. And then the last thing you do is you notify us if one of those 5 events happens, called a qualifying event. And then we take over from there and we find out, do you want to cash out or do you want to roll over? So it's
pretty simple. And my last slide is, now I got one more. We do an annual review with the agency, come on site, make sure everything is going smoothly, but we do provide monthly and annual reports so that management gets to keep up on how many, how much assets are in the plan and also what the performance return is. Last slide is our fee structure. So the PARS fee is 2% of assets, and then the U.S. bank fee is 0.12% as the assets come in. So it's a small fee for just holding the money. So that's the end of my presentation, Jason, but I'm available for questions.
Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate that.
What's the value of your assets under management?
That would be on page 2, and that's the bottom left, which would be $3.8 billion. U.S. Bank's a little bigger. They're starts with a T, trillion. But we're at $3.8 billion.
So you've got $70 million in revenue from just this, in fees?
No. That's all programs. Other programs, our fee is considerably lower. So for instance, the 115 Trust, it's a much lower fee because our participation is much different. This one is a much more hands-on program.
Has the agency participated with this type of program before?
No, we haven't.
Who's?
Sorry. Are there any larger issues before that decision to go this direction? Are there any larger issues the agency might want to flag in?
From a staff perspective, it seems you know, not too complex of a decision. It seems like we're talking only about a very small group of classifications, the temporary employees, which are the interns, retired annuitants, which will be periodic. And if we hired part-time employees that work less than 20 hours per week, which adds up to 1,000 hours per year, as Mitch said, and we don't intend to hire people less than 20 hours per week, we haven't done that in the past. So it's only those people, and they're usually here for short periods of time. So assets under management would be small. The administration on our end would be small. And we think that it benefits the employee because of really the Portability Act, and they can take some money with them if they choose to.
Is this a trend with these sorts of employee groups? And our sort types of agencies to go this way or this.
I'm not too familiar with the PARS program. I Mitch and Ken can speak to that, but some of the agencies that they listed here, I'm familiar with them. Uh-huh. And Ken has direct experience with Valeo, with the OPEB, which is a different trust fund, as Mitch mentioned.
Well, they also have this plan too.
Oh, they have this plan also.
Yes.
Okay.
And again, it's just for in Valeo. It was just for the. Part-time, seasonal people.
Yeah.
It's not their full-time employees.
One last question. I'm so sorry.
Are there public agencies that apply these sorts of programs to full-time employees that you know?
Cannot.
Yeah.
It's over 1,000.
That was
at...
I understand.
Yeah, on page 3.
PARS has different programs.
It was for part-time, seasonal, and temporary only. So you cannot be in a full-time retirement system can only be for those that are under 1,000 hours.
But PARS has other programs.
We do have other programs, yes.
Mitch,
thank you.
Who in Center Fell is participating in this?
It's
on your list.
The city?
It's on your list.
The city of
Santa Fe? I just gave a few. We have 250.
The city of Santa Fe does this?
It says Santa Fe.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what was your question?
Page 2. Local ARS plans under administration, amongst the others, Santa Fe. So
right.
This is a Santa Fe city councilor sitting right here.
Yeah, this is all news to me.
Maybe it's like the summer. In my kid worked for the school district one summer.
Right.
So maybe it's the summer school kids or something
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah, common for city that doesn't have a rec and park district in the area would be lifeguards.
Umps.
Yeah, umps, school crossing guards, bus drivers, police dispatchers, library assistants. It completely runs the gamut.
Okay.
Yeah. In my opinion, there's no downside to this. You're saving money, albeit not a lot, and the part-timer is getting a very good benefit with a nice, a portable asset at the end that can roll over when they leave.
It seems that the employee really benefits the most, because if you put them into Social Security and pay there, they're not eligible to reap that benefit for many, many, many years to come. They can't roll it over to anything. And CalPERS really is meant for full time.
Right.
Well, but Social Security is more of a long-term...
Yeah, both of those.
The long-term benefits, I mean, this encourages consumption.
Or if they leave...
Juicy economy, baby.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it would enable a 19-year-old kid from here to roll it over into a 401k if they went into a private sector job.
Right.
Or cash it out.
Or cash it out and get a new house.
Or buy it for college loan. You see them use it for college loan. College? Well, exactly.
Mr. Chair, this is what I asked earlier. Is there a policy discussion that, I mean, you're getting into it?
Yeah.
Before you cross this line? Or is this considered best practice and so many other people are doing it, it's not a big deal?
Jason and I discussed this probably about 3 weeks ago, bringing it forward. It was brought based on the experience of our staff to Jason, and Jason brought it to me, and I said it's worth discussion. And there is sort of no policy. It's a resolution on how to for these short-term, part-time people, we're somewhat making a philosophical decision on the longevity of our Social Security system, and do we continue to mandate that the short-term employees continue to, and we put in for them as well into that system. At such a short stint in their young careers, mostly, except for retired annuitants who don't need the Social Security benefit. That's one plus on the retired annuitant side, but also on people just getting their life going. And there is always the, you know, should we be encouraging or making people put into a system that one may not be there or will be there and would have been a good investment over? It's sort of that balance of what we're discussing. So it is a, I guess, a policy decision on how we handle the short-term assets of
Well, I included the philosophical discussion in the policy decision. Do we want to have that?
Yes, and I was... It's not a lot of money that the district or the agency is looking at here, but it's what do we want to give to our short-term, young, mostly young employees in this situation. I clearly think, personally, I think the older retired annuitants have their quarters in, and it's not going to put them into some other higher quarter of earnings that it's going to spike their Social Security at all, so they don't need to put in anymore. So that's sort of squelch. But
I understand the clear interests that have been framed, but I guess the philosophical discussion that would remain to be had is, are there larger issues with respect to this agency and responsibilities to the larger system for the long term, as you said, you know, and recognize that those, and would we be helping to whittle away at something that might or might not be in the public interest?
That is a good point. I think this agency, though, made at its formation the decision that we would not participate in Social Security. And so this is just such a small...
This is why I'm asking.
This is a very, very small segment of $40,000 of employment on our annual salary budget of how many million? So I don't think it's... Yeah. So I think the agency, how many, 30 years ago, already made this decision?
Is that cited in the standard?
Yeah, it says right here. No, they're not in Social Security.
Okay.
It might also be reasonable to assume that if we reach a point where the Social Security system is looking vulnerable, like very vulnerable, if it's looking like it may be entering crisis, I wouldn't be surprised if the federal government were to act and say something along the lines of, you know, these alternative plans that were provided for under OBRA are now going to be somehow converted and sent into Social Security. I wouldn't be surprised if they do something to shore up the system that way.
Well, I just want to make sure I know as much as I can about the context before I cross the line with everybody, right?
Yeah.
Is there a line we're crossing? That's what I'm
Yeah, it's a rather startling proposition.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't want to unwittingly, you know, just by not knowing more, help something.
Yeah.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Maybe we could continue this to the next meeting and allow our San Rafael rep to find out how San Rafael's experiences.
Yeah, I'd at least like to find out what's going on there.
Where it came about.
And get some assessment of their the value proposition for the management here. These fees seem high, and I'd like to see how the trust fund has been managed. What have the returns been? How do you justify that? That fee, and see if our entire finance team thinks that this is a soundly run operation. That said, we apparently have 3 decades of anti-social security policy. We probably shouldn't use this small program to turn that around. And yes, our young workers would probably rather have 6% more in their paycheck.
Well,
I guess it's not 6% more.
Is it your understanding that this is considered a best practice then? For this sort of...
I don't know if I'd call it best practice, but I'd say it's a worthy alternative to Social Security for some of the reasons that you guys have talked about. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Chair DiGiovanni made a good point that the agency made a decision, strategic decision back in the 1980s, that they're not going to participate in Social Security for whatever reasons. And this little decision just kind of aligns with that over time.
So is this... The reason we're considering this tonight is because up until tonight, this hasn't been available?
The reason we're considering it tonight is because we haven't had temporary employees really in the past or retired annuitants.
Right.
We've never really thought about an alternative program in the past. So this now with the board's decision, one to hire the retired annuitant, now he's paying Social Security, and he's in CalPERS, so he'll never see the benefits of paying into it. And as Mary Beth pointed out, you know, her prior employer hired lots of retired annuitants, and you know, we may want to do that too as more of our senior staff retire, so we can utilize, you know, their institutional knowledge. So we may have more in the future, maybe not. Mm-hmm. And now we have the interns that we decided a few months ago to start compensating, so it could help them out also. So for management, it seems like it aligns with the past board major decision. The administrative fees are higher than other options, but if you look at the attachment to the staff reports and the $45,000 number that Mitch cites is the actual operating budget amount for the internship program. And we talked about that you know, a few months ago. It's based on so many interns here in the summer and during the school year. So we need some assumptions of how many hours at an hourly rate that was approved by the board, the median rate or the middle rate, and what that would be on an annual basis. That was $45,000. So you can look at the examples. There are a lot of different scenarios. But scenario 5 is the equal split, 3.75, 3.75. Right. So you can see the contribution by each entity. You can see what the management fee is for CMSA. And then you see the total CMSA cost is $1,755. If we paid Social Security, that cost would be $2,790. So that shows that you add in the administrative fee, but it's still a pretty good savings to the agency. But we weren't necessarily, when Ken and I were talking, we weren't really necessarily looking at a big savings to the agency. We were looking at, does a program make sense as an alternative and will help out the you know, the interns and retired annuitants? And that's why I brought it to Chair DiGiovanni, and he suggested we bring it to the board.
Okay.
I don't, you know, as a manager, see a downside to it, really.
So you've heard from other like agencies to CMSA that this is a good idea?
I haven't done any research because, as I said, there's 250 participating, and Ken, you know, worked out in Vallejo, and I trusted, you know, Ken's experience in Vallejo, and that was enough for me to think that we could bring it to the CMSA.
I see.
From a fee standpoint, let's work the math together. So $45,000 annual payroll times 7.5% going into the trust is $3,375 times a 2% fee is $67.50 annually to operate this program, $67. So percentage-wise, it sounds high, but overall, and the one thing I did drop off that we normally have is a minimum, $300 monthly minimum, but because I know Ken from two prior agencies, we did the friends and family thing and eliminated the monthly minimum. So I think for $68, I think this is a good benefit, in my opinion.
Your company is going to do all this work for us for $68 a year?
Yes, sir.
It's pooled investments, and so these contributions just goes into a pool.
Right. The record keeping of writing a letter to you guys is worth $68.
Yeah.
How much you charge for tonight's appearance?
By the way, what we do is we also do an orientation when the program starts, so that they, about a 30-minute presentation, so that they understand. If they're young, we encourage them to bring their parents so that they understand. We want everybody to be fully informed. And then once they are eligible for distribution, one of those five events takes place. We write them and say, you're now eligible. Would you like to cash out or roll over? And again, the younger they are, they won't know exactly what that means. So we encourage them to have their parents call. Or if they're older and they still don't understand, have their financial advisor call. And then we walk them through what the options are.
So. And if I'm correct, they can also then, if they were to get hired on as a full-time employee with CMSA, they could buy in with that money into CalPERS?
Eventually. The government, of course, doesn't do anything simple.
2 years?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. There's a two-year wait on that fifth qualifying event.
Right. Okay, that's right.
Yeah. So the money's invested. It's earning interest during that two-year period of time. But at the end of the 2 years, we then notify them, it's up. Now, what would you like to do? Would you like to cash out or roll over? And one of the rollover options would be the 457 deferred comp plan with the agency.
Okay. Could they also buy into CalPERS, though?
They can if eligible. That is an option on that page. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Two unrelated questions. One, what is the proposed term of the agreement?
It's 3 years.
3 years, okay. And do you know off the top of your head what your returns have been for the last?
Sure.
Are there downside?
Ken and I looked at that, and there are seven different types of investment portfolios that you can select, from equity-based to more very conservative. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of different time periods, but it was like 10 years out, it was like 2% all the way to 10%.
And are these standard investment funds, or these funds that they manage?
So Highmark Capital is described on that three company, far right.
So they're the investment.
Yes, ma'am. They're a subsidiary of Union Bank. They've got $16 billion under administration or management down below. And they have five strategies, five risk tolerance levels. We have two in the fixed income category, meaning no equities, no stocks, right? And that's earned in the last year through June 30, either 2.3% or 3.1%. So that's fixed income. If you said, we'll take a little risk, what's the next level up? That's called a conservative strategy, and it's 15% stocks, 85% bonds. Over 1 year through June 30, 7.2. Over 10 years, 5.2. Last year was a crazy year that fixed income, we did very well, right? Did better than equity, which is not normal. So I would look more at the 10-year return as a better indication. So just with a little bit of risk, 5.2. But if you absolutely wanted no risk, you go with one of those fixed income categories, which earned 2.3 for a more stable value, or 3.1 for a short-term fixed income.
And normal retirement system funds are more on the
aggressive side.
Yeah. Not quite aggressive.
So CalPERS, for instance, that's a 75-25 strategy. 75% equity, 25% bonds.
Okay.
The reason it's so aggressive is trying to meet that discount rate, right? That used to be 7.5, and now they're bringing it down to 7.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they bringing it down? Because they've not been able to meet 7.5 long term.
Right.
Capital markets said, get real, bring it down to something you can achieve. So this year it finally gets down to 7, and then the CEO of CalPERS, Marcy Frost, said next year, 2020, they're going to take up the next round of discussions, which will probably lower it from 7 to 6.5. So you see where it's going. And the key is to eventually choose a risk tolerance level if you get to that point on this program that the agency feels comfortable with.
So
it's the agency that chooses the risk level, not the individual participant.
Correct. Our portfolio manager will make a recommendation once he understands those four individuals and approximately how long they're going to stay. Because if they're very short-term, 3 to 4 months, then you can argue, let's go fixed income. We don't want to lose any money. If they're going to be here for 2, 3, 4 years, but in a part-time mode, well, maybe conservative is a good strategy because you can take on a little bit of risk because you've got some time. But he'll talk that through with Ken and staff and make a recommendation, but ultimately it's the agency's decision always.
Mr.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Does the fund manager, Mr. Brown, does he come out here for the PARS program too? Excuse me, for the RS program?
He does.
Okay. So the comment is that the fund manager, who I always had a wonderful experience with, is willing to come here on an annual basis to provide a report, and you can ask him anything you want to know and find out all kinds of things about how the investment market is doing.
I just had a quick question. Is there a downside to allowing one meeting to go by and bring this back so that, for example, someone like myself has been hearing and discussing these sorts of things that are out on the horizon and just hadn't seen them in front of us so quickly, could check with our city manager and see if this is
the
reality of things now. And
there's no downside at all. We could bring it back in October.
Have any concern? I would table it until you feel comfortable.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
I think that's a good idea. Let's Mary Beth look at her time.
Yeah.
So there isn't anything here I disagree with. I just
Nevada's done something about retirement.
I appreciate that.
No, I think that's a smart decision. Wait till you feel comfortable.
One additional question, Jason. Has this been run by the various unions?
Our bargaining units?
Our bargaining units. Yes.
No, because the temporary employees aren't in the bargaining unit. And this wouldn't affect any of the bargaining unit employees.
Not even as sort of an FYI kind of a...
We haven't talked to them about it, no.
Okay.
The only part-timers I've ever seen represented are typically the cities that have lifeguards. They typically are represented by SEIU.
I'm just wondering philosophically how they feel about this.
Yeah.
Not...
Well, that's the point I was going to make, is we have a lot of... If you looked at our full client list, you'll see a lot of beach-related cities... Newport Beach, Huntington Beach, goes right up and down the coast. Their bargaining unit, SEIU, has endorsed the program. So, the only downside, and I've been asked this many times, because you see, you're saving money and they're getting a better take-home check, and the question usually is, all right, this is too good to be true, what's going on here? The downside is they're not earning Social Security credits while they're in the program. That's the only downside, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And
but as a part-timer, they're going to be a full-timer with somebody down the road, ideally, either with you or another public agency or the private sector. And if they go to another agency, since you're not in Social Security for a full-time, then they'll start earning Social Security credits again at that other agency. So.
And Social Security is a defined benefit program.
It
versus
is.
This, which is defined contribution. So it's that your defined benefit income for many, many years when you're at this young part-time stage. Yeah. I would entertain a motion to move this to the next meeting after we have enough time to discuss.
I'll second the motion to continue. Don't need the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
You bet.
For that whopping.
Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate it.
All right.
Take
care.
Very nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ken.
You're welcome.
I'd just like to comment that it's nice that staff is thinking outside of just our normal way of doing business all the time and bringing their experiences to the table, and I really do appreciate that from staff to bring those life experiences and other work experiences to our agency.
I echo that. I want to make sure you understand. I want to just be able to check and make sure it's as brilliant as what I'm hearing.
I've worked with them for 16, 17 years, a long time. You know, I can attest to just about anything, but nonetheless, you know, you need to go through your process, essentially. So.
Well, I'm just catching up. I mean, I would put it in the category of a little slow on the uptake here for me. So.
Yeah.
I value your patience.
Due diligence.
Okay, moving on to agenda item number 6. This is for Tyler Technologies Financial Systems Software Procurement, and this is a recommendation to approve the Tyler Technologies License and Service Agreement for the purchase of a new financial software system.
So this is a follow-up discussion from the July meeting, which is our last meeting. And during that meeting, I gave you a pretty good overview of the FY19 business plan activity to identify different software packages that could, you know, hopefully replace our 30-year-old OSAS financial software, and the evaluation process that Ken and our admin staff and our strategic planning committee and other stakeholders went through that ultimately led to the selection of Tyler Technologies Encode software. And at the meeting, also reviewed how this is now a activity to procure and install it in our FY20 business plan, and we included funds in the FY20 capital improvement plan to procure the software. So, but during the discussion also, I mentioned that after the agenda went out on Friday, Ken went on a family vacation to Europe for a couple weeks, so he wasn't available to come to the board meeting and answer any questions. And we weren't going to call him in Europe. And,
right.
And also that there were a couple questions that were posed to me, you know, after Ken had left that I couldn't answer, and that had to do specifically with compatibility of a couple of the modules or reports in the asset management software and how those could be, you know, the data could be transmitted to the finance software, or how would you get the information flowing between the two packages. And, you know, I said because I couldn't answer that, and that was a significant staff concern at the time, that one option was we continue this to tonight's meeting, and you guys thought that was a good idea. So we can return from vacation. We had a debrief of what was discussed at the board, and he met with, you know, all of the operations and maintenance staff that utilize the next-gen asset management program to talk about the timesheet module and the purchase order module that they had concerns about, and they kind of developed an internal procedure on how they could resolve any questions that the staff had. So everything's been solved from my perspective. So staff's recommendation is to authorize the procurement of the Tyler Technologies software, approve the agreement, and authorize me to sign it. And if that's approved, then we'll develop an action plan, a transition plan over the next year to, you know, have Tyler provide the training for our staff, to install the software, to migrate data, to start training our staff on the different modules, and eventually, you know, over the course of the year, stop using OSAS. So that's the recommendation, and so Ken's here to answer any tough questions, and also
Cody
Gunderson. Is that right, Gunderson?
Gunston.
Sorry about that. I didn't answer. From Tyler is here to answer any questions.
Sure.
you've been able to see good examples of this in action solving similar problems for other agencies. So the software that it's describing here is already something that's been tried and tested, or is it yet to be tailored to CMSA's needs?
Well, we currently, a couple questions there. First of all, members of the board, thank you for having me tonight. Yes, we currently work with over 60 clients across California that are on ENCODE 10, ENCODE version 10, which is what we were proposing here currently. Specifically, to tailor that solution here, what we really like to do is, what I like to tell people, it's the most out-of-the-box customized solution, right? We bring it to you, but part of the implementation, what it starts with, is us coming out here and understanding what are your business practices today so we can tailor that solution. So it's delivered as a fully tailored solution on your business practices, how the administration runs the business here, across all modules, from purchasing, how it works in Nexion, and how that flows into ENCODE and so forth.
But there's no understanding of the fit before we contract with you.
Well, there's absolutely an understanding of a fit. I believe Ken and the administration had done that through their due diligence.
I see. Great. Thank you. That answers my question.
I'd like to just mention also that there's not very many software packages that are suited very well for utility special districts, and this one is suited very well. Most of them are municipal, you know, they're nonprofit, they're a combination of corporate, which is what we have right now with the open systems as a corporate package, and not a specifically governmental package. And that's what this is.
But you can directly see this as the bridge between your needs and necessary outcome here.
Yes. Yes.
My understanding is that for the first time, this software, when implemented, will allow our managers and the people in charge here on their desk to be able to ask and see reports on an as-need basis.
That's correct.
We could be sitting here with that computer and ask you a question, and you could just go on over there.
Online, what if scenarios.
Project it here for us.
That's correct, yes.
Instead of saying, we'll table this till next month, Ken, go get us some answers.
Right, right.
And what about screens? Can we put big screens up and have dashboards?
Yes, it has a dashboard system, yes.
We totally need one of those. Until.
In the operations control room, right?
In the operations control room,
exactly. I remember we talked about this before, but it doesn't say it on tonight's recommendation. What's the cost of the software and the maintenance again?
It's $135,000 for
down there, right?
The software package and all the services to install right. It. And then it has an annual service fee, which will start next year, of $20,000.
So that was it, because I asked you that one question. Just one big thing, Cody. If I remember, the $20,000 annual software maintenance fee, which includes, I understand, you know, I'm in the business, the upgrades and all that, but it was 7 by 24, if I remember. Is that right?
I'm sorry, 7 by 24.
24 by 7.
What was it? 24/7. Help desk?
Right.
24/7 customer
support. Right, customer support. So our customer support, it's 7 to 7 central time. So it would be 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. here. However, if there's support needed for after hours, holidays, if I'm coming in on the weekend, that can all just be scheduled, and that's included in that package.
Okay, so your normal support hours are 12 hours a day. Because it was funny. My question was, who the hell's calling an accounting company at 4 a.m.? I mean, it just...
They come to can't sleep.
Yeah. That's fine. That was the question I had the first time, was why would we 7 be paying for 7 by 24 when nobody is going to be here at 3 o'clock in the morning ever making those phone calls? The answer is it's not. It's really 12
hours. And you can make arrangements.
Let's say you were, you know, some corruption in the database.
No, scheduled. Right.
Then you could schedule it.
Absolutely.
You know, it's something that can...
It can be anything along the lines of, hey, I was busy. I didn't have enough time to get my work done. I'm going to come in on Saturday, and I might need some resources set aside if I have a hiccup. It can be that, as simple as that. It can be as challenging as if you had mentioned there's something along with the data or something along with my process. I need help to fix it, and that can be scheduled out. It can be done on weekends, holidays, after hours.
I love that. I understand that. But what I'm saying is if for some reason I corrupt my data on Friday at 5 o'clock West Coast time, and I come in Saturday morning and I make a phone call, it's not getting answered.
The short answer is it would most likely roll around till 7 a.m. Monday.
That's right. I do it. I have no problem.
I think, can I mention that the data is backed up daily on the East Coast, right?
That's correct. Okay.
So we can recover data.
How many of those backups do you save?
We're dual redundant, or dual backup. So we have servers in Dallas, Texas, down in the federal building.
No. I corrupted my data on Tuesday night, but I didn't realize it until Thursday. Do you have a copy of my corrupted data, or do you have a copy of my Monday data?
I would have to go and get an answer for it. I think I'd be lying if I told you right now.
Okay.
If you can give me 24 hours, I'm more than happy to give you an answer.
I don't think that. I would suggest, by the way, you might want to think about that. We've had that problem, and some of our software people hold 7 days. It's like, oh, great, let's go back to Saturday, which was good, and put Saturday back in because we messed it up Monday morning, and I almost screwed up.
What's the term of this agreement?
Term.
Term. How long does it last?
It's essentially a yearly agreement with an annual renewal.
Annual renewal.
Yes, ma'am.
Because you bought the software.
Yes.
And that's part of the $20,000 fee.
That's correct. And those initial fees are, I believe Jason had said that the initial fees are waived year one, annual fees. It's included in the upfront cost.
Correct.
Okay. And is that a one-time payment? Is that payable as a lump sum, or is it paid over?
So the actual payment terms, the structure is laid out in the agreement. The license fees, it's really broken up because you're buying into an on-premise solution, right? So you'll pay a percentage of the license fees up front, mm-hmm. and then the one in the implementation training, those fees and hours, those are billed as incurred, right? So as we deliver the financial package, right, you're going to incur those fees.
So we didn't need to cut checks $125,000.
Correct.
Right. At your convenience, I'm ready to make a motion.
Any more questions? I'll entertain a motion to approve the Tyler System Software Package for our financial system software procurement.
So moved.
Well,
second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All against? No names. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cody. Moving on to item number 7. This is an item to accept the Anderson Drive landslide repairs project as substantially complete. And Jason has some new information to discuss.
Well, you know, when we wrote the staff report, we were hoping it would be substantially complete. But contractor didn't bring resources out since last Thursday to do a lot of the final contract work. So it's not substantially complete. And there is an issue associated with tiebacks and covers for the tiebacks and the whalers and how that was installed. So there's going to have to be some rework. So for a few hours this afternoon, I was working with our engineering staff and our contract attorney, construction attorney, looking at, you know, design details, you know, submittals from the subcontractor, figuring out what the issue was and why was it constructed this way. And why does this rework have to happen? And who's really responsible for that? So we're working out that now. We're going to send a letter to the contractor tomorrow to hopefully motivate him to mobilize some forces to come out and get the work done. And we'll send another letter with the solution for the whaler tieback situation, which is really just follow what's in the approved submittal from their subcontractor. And so I just suggest that we continue this at another meeting.
I don't want to make this a theme, but I move that we continue this to the next meeting. Or
and I plan just to bring this as a consent item since we have the report here and we have the cost breakdown. And you see that about 90% of the cost of the project is going to be reimbursed from FEMA Cal OES. And their project deadline for us was October 1st. And it may not be that the job is done by October 1st. We've already contacted the representative with Cal OES. And he said there'd be no problem with us extending that completion date for you. Just send us a letter. So we're going to, as prepared, we're going to finalize it tomorrow. Email it to him. That way we have a record as a copy of it. And we have put in the letter to the general contractor that if things aren't done by a certain date, we're going to inform your performance bond surety. And if it jeopardizes, you know, our FEMA reimbursement, that that will become an actual damage for the project, which will easily exceed the current level of liquidated damages. So it's all in the works right now, so we can continue it.
Let me make a point. I drive by that almost every day. And when I do, I drive by it slowly. And there may be some things they're not doing, but they've done, what I can see, is a very substantial job.
Yeah.
And I know the road, for example, I have one concern. You were on vacation, and I don't remember who called me back from CMSA.
Okay.
You may have recalled that, but my concern was, when we took that tour, Dean and I and you, we stopped right there at that slide, like, oh my God, we're about to roll off the hill.
That's right.
And my concern and question was that going to be put back as a road? And I can tell you the answer to that was yes. And the answer to that is yes, because 2 days ago I saw a bulldozer parked right there on top of that berm, that, you know, the big picture, the substantial
yes,
one.
Yes.
And so that road has been repaired. You know, they've done a lot of work. I don't want anybody to get the impression that this is some sort of a mess, but obviously you need to do your due diligence and, you know.
The contract completion date, which was extended through the first change order, is August 16th. So they're quite a bit delinquent on finishing it. But they've done a lot of good work so far. But it appears that, you know, it's a small contractor and they have multiple jobs.
Yeah, and there's some things around there.
That's true, too.
So I think you can represent to the contractor that the board is disappointed that this is not completed on time and that we need to continue this matter. And we hope that they will remediate this problem and bring it into compliance with the requirements.
Definitely.
I think that's a good sense of the board.
So was this in concert with a progress panel, the staff report, and then the whole reporting around this milestone? Is it in conjunction with a payment expectation?
What has to happen at the end of a job, you have your governing board accept right. as complete,
yes.
and then they authorize the staff to file
substantially complete as a milestone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then once it's fully complete, you file the notice of completion with the county, and then that starts, I believe it's a 30-day time period where we still hold the project to retainage. And during that period, it's an opportunity for suppliers and subcontractors to notify the agency if they haven't been paid.
So the contractor told you that they were substantially complete?
No, they didn't.
Was this scheduled with the expectation that, as you said earlier, that this would...
Yeah, our expectation was the job would be done in August, and this would be on the September agenda.
So they haven't given you a... They're not trying to bill out ahead of the progress, I guess.
No. And when we receive a progress payment, we review that, you know, fully and thoroughly to make sure that it only represents the work that's been done and completed in the field. Yeah, so there hasn't...
No surprises here.
No surprises.
And to answer yours, Mary Beth, no, I don't think so. This was review and provide comments, which we've done, so I don't think there's any motion here.
Okay. Well, we need to continue it on our agenda.
Yep.
Did someone move that?
I did move that.
I will second that.
And all in favor of moving this to the October meeting?
It may be October or November, depending on the progress. This future meeting, is that okay?
The future meeting, at your discretion. Thank you. Moving on to item number 8, the CMSA fee ordinance revisions. This is a recommendation to review and provide comments on the proposed revisions to the agency's fee ordinance and to schedule a public hearing for the ordinance at the October 8th board meeting.
Okay, thank you. So, as you know, CMSA periodically reviews, you know, policy manuals and ordinances. And we learned recently that the GPA member agencies, they collect our capacity charge for new connections to the sewer system and also for additional fixture units for existing users of the system. And there was a changeover staff at one of the agencies, and they contacted us about, you know, a collection of capacity charges for, like, expansion of a business where they're adding more fixture units. Mm-hmm. And they said they read our fee ordinance, and the ordinance specifically said only new sewer connections. They said, per your ordinance, we shouldn't be collecting for additional fixture units. But they've been doing that for decades, and we checked in. The other agencies have done that, too. So we figured, well, we should probably review the whole ordinance, propose revisions with the most significant one, aligning the collection of the capacity charge with the current practice that's done by the member agencies. So that was the impetus for doing it, and one of the big changes in here. And the other changes are kind of laid out in the staff report. There's 12 of them, and they're highlighted in red text throughout the ordinance. So in addition to For example, you can go to page 4, you can see item 3 is added, and that's the capacity charge fixture units expansion amount. And then we also updated, you know, the capacity charge amounts, which automatically increase based on ENR construction cost index for the Bay Area. Those automatically increase. And our septage hauler fees automatically increase also based on our average EDU rate. So part of this is updating those numbers.
And there was a change just in section 1 that was important to take all of our names out to make it easier. That's
correct. Thanks for pointing that out. So under the definitions, there's member agency. And the current ordinance says one of the 4 signatories to the JPA lists the agencies. We thought it would be simpler to say one of the any of the signatories of the JPA. And this is given that Larkspur is looking at withdrawing. And another significant change is on page 8. And here what we did is we pulled in the fee structure from the sewer use ordinance into the fee ordinance, because we thought it's more appropriate to have all the fees listed in one place. So that's what is explained in the table. So those are the different, you know, categories of entities that we permit, a little description, and what the fees are. And those fees have increased quite a bit. The fees that were in the sewer use ordinance, we're not quite sure when those were developed. So what we did is we had our staff look at what are the actual costs to permit a new user or to issue a permit renewal for an existing user. So they looked at, you know, what staff are involved and what's the weighted hourly rate and the amount of time. And that's how these numbers were developed in this table.
So
and that's
just how much of an increase is this represented?
This is shown in this schedule here. And this is a schedule that was Ken's idea. He said it's probably good if we have a master fee schedule with all our fees on it. That the fees are in the ordinance, the fees are on the website, but we didn't have something just on a piece of paper that we could laminate and put at the front desk or give the people. So we had a draft of this ready in anticipation of the ordinance being passed. And then Commissioner Beckman called and said, hey, it'd be a great idea if you showed something with your current fees and your proposed fees. So we just added the current fees on here so you can see the increases. So look at the categories, you know, the capacity charges. Those all increased based on the construction cost index. And that's automatic adjustment. Looking at the waste hauler charges, those automatically increase in the ordinance based on our EDU rate. So there's an increase there. Fog charges, those are the same. Now the monitoring fee, those have increased from 15 to 75. And that's if we decide to grab a sample from, say, a septic hauler, that's the actual cost to grab the sample, do the analysis, and enter it into our laboratory information management system. And then under the monitoring fees, you can see the current fee structure from 435 to 370, and then the new categories, which are the new permittees and renewals. So it's quite a bit of increase, but we believe the increase is warranted because it's full cost recovery.
I have a question.
Yeah.
On the industrial monitoring fees, when I look across for permit class 1 and I see new, renewal, and then there's the current.
Yes.
The 435 current, what's the relationship of that to the other charges? Am I looking at an increase from 435 to 1200?
Yeah, if there's a new class 1 user coming in the service area, there's very few of those.
So currently, for even new, under 435 is for new.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So that's those are the main changes. And
to follow up on that, so someone like today could come in and say, I'm a new industrial user, permit class 1, and it's cost me $435 to apply, us to review it, set up them in our system, and go out and do our analysis of their waste and to say, yeah, you do fit that category. So right now, it costs $435, and then if they come in after we adopt this, it's going to be $1,200.
That's right.
And that's the justification for that, is that's really what our costs are to get this person all set up and to do our work.
That's right.
And we have a cost of service study that justifies every one of those numbers.
It's not a cost of service study. It's our staff has a lot of experience issuing these permits, new permits, and all the tasks associated with that, and then renewing the permits. Some are annual, some are 3-year. And there's a series of administrative work. There's going out and inspecting the facility. There's taking samples, make sure that whatever material they have complies with our local limits. So there's a series of work there. So we've done the internal analysis of what classifications do that, how much time does it take them to do it, and here's the current weighted hourly rate.
That's a cost of service study.
Yeah. I always think that's like a consultant study or something.
Oh, no.
But it was an internal cost of service study. That's
it's
right.
It's a cost of service study that justifies every one of those numbers.
Yes, that's correct. Okay.
And this was current costs are from, was that when last time?
Those costs have been in the sewer use ordinance for quite a long time, and I don't know, you know, when they were developed. I don't have an answer for that.
Well, that's been a long time, then, because you've been here a long time.
Before your time?
I think they've increased since then. But, and I never knew that they were low. When I always saw these numbers, I thought, okay, that represents cost recovery. Mm-hmm. Then our new environmental compliance manager, Mark Kokomore, who's made presentations in the past, you know, we had all the senior managers review this, and when we decided to bring in the sewer use ordinance fees into this ordinance, he said, we should probably have, you know, different costs for the two categories, new and renewal, because it takes less effort on renewal. And then he got together his staff and really looked at what are all the tasks, you know, who does it, what are the costs, and he came up with these numbers. And it's just full cost recovery. So I don't have a good answer of how those other ones were developed, but I'm assuming it was quite a long time ago and they weren't adjusted over time. But we did add language now to Section 9 where it says these costs will be adjust each year based on the Bay Area Consumer Price Index to reflect, you know, how our labor costs increase each year.
Do we have any other fees out there that we haven't looked at for a while? This is a rhetorical question.
We're probably going to do a study in the future on the waste hauler charges. When you read the current ordinance, you could infer from it that we grab samples a lot from haulers. But I learned that we've never done that for all the years that we've had a fee ordinance. So we changed language here to say it's discretionary. But what we're going to do over the next year, at least, is we're going to randomly sample from haulers. So there's 12 haulers right now that are permitted by the County of Marin to haul, you know, septage and mm-hmm. various type materials around the county. And they bring it here, so we know who they are. We know their drivers and their trucks and all that. So each month, we're going to have a certain set of these haulers go grab a sample, and they'll put a cooler out there, we'll analyze it, we'll collect the data. So we'll just try to characterize the waste that they're bringing in to see if there's any issues. More importantly, to be able to refine these numbers a little bit to see what's the level of, you know, solids and organics relative to the influence, and then what's the appropriate fee structure. So this makes sense for this version, but likely in the future, in a year or two, we might have another proposed change to an ordinance based on this septage hauler study.
Well, if there's no further discussion, I'll make a motion.
Please do.
All right, I would move that we schedule a public hearing for Ordinance 2019-1 for October 8th, 2019.
Second. Oh, it's been moved and seconded to schedule the public hearing for the new fee ordinance revisions at the October 8th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Maybe we
all opposed?
No. Maybe you should hold it at the Civic Center because I suspect we're going to have thousands of people show up and be interested in this.
On to the pump.
Well,
on to the pump.
It's a good job on updating these numbers and coming up with these updating costs, and you have a good plan of attack to keep them up to date now with the indexing for CPI.
Should I review the ordinance passing process real quick? Or were you?
I did get a question on that, so that'd be good to just sort of go through the mechanics of what we're obligated to do under the Special District Act of 1923, is it?
Sanitary District, yeah. So just briefly, our JPA lists a lot of, you know, agencies, authorities, and powers and limitations. And it says if it's not covered in the JPA, it's kind of, you know, limited or tied to what's in the Sanitary District Act. So if we're passing ordinance, there's no reference in the JPA of how we will do that. So we go back to the Sanitary District Act. And the process they have there is essentially just one meeting. So you have a public hearing, and if ordinance is passed, then you publish it in the local paper within 15 days. You either publish the full text of the ordinance or a summary. If it's a summary, then you list, you know, how the board members voted on it. So CMSA, years ago, we brought a memo to the board with two processes. One is that basic process that is the minimum legal requirements for very simple changes in ordinance. Like if we're just updating numbers in here to reflect automatic adjustments, that'd be something we just maybe have a public hearing and report out in the summary ordinance. Or if it's something like this, where we're pulling in fees from other ordinances, we're having some significant increases, we're changing the language, we'd say that's more substantive. Then we'll go through a second process, and that is bring what we have tonight to the board. You know, here's some proposed revisions, get some feedback, either they're accepted or accepted with other changes, set a public hearing. Then we advertise a summary of the ordinance with the hearing date in the paper within 5 days before the hearing. We have the hearing. Then we have a summary of the ordinance with who voted, you know, or abstained, published in the paper within 15 days, and the ordinance takes effect 31 days after the passage. So we use a two-step process on more significant changes, but that's well beyond the legal requirements. So I just wanted to explain that, and this came into work a long time ago, and we thought that was a good, just more open process for public, you know, notification and engagement for those that are reading our agendas.
Thank you.
That's why you're going to hold the hearing at Oracle Park.
Is it any bigger than
me? We should have to do that, son.
Okay. We're on to... Yes, item number nine. This is a recommendation to adopt the construction contract documents for the San Quentin Pump Station Monitor Control Center and Control Panel Upgrade Project.
Okay, so I'll be brief here. The final design documents were prepared by GHD Engineering. You know, we reviewed those. We shared those with the facilities manager and his staff over at San Quentin. They've reviewed those, said it looks fine, and they've authorized a public bidding on it. So now it's before the board for you to accept the construction contract documents and authorize the public bidding. And if you do that, we'll then advertise in the next few days, and we'll have a bid opening sometime probably in mid-October, and then probably late October, then we'll have an award recommendation to the board at the November meeting.
I have a question. I don't mean this to be flip. For the capacity design at San Quentin, what's the worst case scenario out there? Everybody flushes at once? Or it's never going to happen?
You mean the capacity of their system?
Yeah.
I can't speak to their collection system and their internal few pump stations that they have. I just speak to the main pump station and the force main and the interceptor it ties to. There's plenty of capacity there, and I can say that because the flows at San Quentin have decreased over the years, and the capacity of the pump station, the pumping capacity of the station has remained the same. We've, you know, replaced the motors on the pumps, you know, replace pumps as needed, same capacity, and we haven't done a capacity evaluation, but we do know the capacity that was there was based on maximum projected flows back in, you know, the early 1980s, and the prison population has shrunk since then. We don't know how much and reasons why, you know, a few reasons why, but we've seen the flows decrease over time, and also the potable water consumption.
And that's because the population is decreased.
Yeah, there's a lot of the lower security inmates were transferred out of the prison in the past. That's one of the reasons that we're right now recruiting for those three new employees to do the bar rack cleaning at the pump station, because they don't have the low security inmates to do that anymore. No, or they just have a small pool.
So well. Yeah, last one didn't work out so well anyway.
Do you know when the last
time for him?
do you know when the last time they had their collection system improved? I mean, it's 150 years old.
Yeah, I know very little about the condition of their internal collection system and the type of rehabilitation or replacement work they're doing. But I know the pump station's in great condition.
So
if it makes it to us, we're going to get rid of it.
So your knowledge ends at the point where the pump station meets the collection system?
Yeah, that's right.
So there's just a lot of trust.
Well, it's no different than ours, really.
Yeah, but we have somebody who's doing it. Us.
Well, they have somebody who's doing it them. I mean, there's a certain amount of trust here that the individual agencies...
If we saw flows increasing, well, then we'd ask questions. Like if there was more toilet flushing, there was more inmates moving in, if... there was, you know, some major structural problems, you know, in the collection system. There was more INI coming in. We would see that with just flow increases because we have the trends, you know, of all that information in our process control system. But we haven't seen it. It's been very consistent, actually, since it's decreased.
If you were spotting those things, would you know what to ask them so they could fix the problem?
Well, we would inform them what we've measured. And, you know, what the increase has been, then we'd say, you guys want to get to talk about it.
Location would be their problem.
Yeah, but we have some ideas. We'd say, okay, when's the last time you done any condition assessment work on your system? Last time you measured flows in parts of your system? When's the last time you CCTV'd your system? When have you rehabilitated certain pipelines? We'd ask a lot of these kind of questions and just try to be helpful.
So they've got responsibilities equal to any member. Right.
Yeah, they own and operate their system.
For the quality control of their own collection system.
That's correct.
Relative to the permit. Thank you.
Yeah, they don't have a permit. They operate under the state's waste discharge requirements.
A question. So the estimated cost is $321,000 going out to bid on this. If it comes in at $360,000, San Quentin will... be able to move forward with, or I should say the Department of Corrections would be able to move forward with funding this under our agreement with them.
Yeah, so right now we have $718,000 in a special fund in our contract amendment that was approved, you know, a couple months ago for this work. And that's really to cover this work, our administrative costs for managing the project, and construction for phase two. And what I did mention was the engineering that was done was for phase one and phase two. So we have the design documents for both phases. We're only bidding the phase one because we can't do, you know, the phase two work while we're doing the phase one work. It'd just be people would bump into each other. There'd be too many complications with the construction. So yeah, there's plenty of money in the contract. If it came, you know, more than, you know, 700, then we just talk to corrections about it and say, what do you guys want to do? Do you want us to put it out to bid again? Do you want to amend the contract to cover it? We'd see what their options were. Then we have to bring something back to this board.
They're subject to a different permit than the other member agencies in CMSA?
The other member agencies now are co-permittees with CMSA.
Correct.
San Quentin, the Regional Water Board said that San Quentin, as well as the Murray Park Sewer Maintenance District and the San Quentin Village Sewer Maintenance District, even though they were independent legal entities and they have collection systems, they're so small that they didn't need to be listed as co-permittees in the MPS permit. But they're operating under state regulations on waste discharge requirements, just like the member agencies are also under those same regulations in addition to being in a permit.
But there's nothing they could do to unduly
impact on operation?
The other permittees with respect to their permitting?
No. I mean, I don't think there's anything they can do to impact, you know, like Santu or Ross Valley, that share column pipeline.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I'll entertain a motion to adopt the construction contract documents for bidding.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We have a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Item 10 is informational items. General Manager Dow.
Well, just the one I just want to point out is item A, which we're excited about. You know, we had that renewable energy expansion project with the State Water Board, and we received a Green Project Reserved SRF loan, and part of that was a $500,000 grant. We received the last disbursement for the project, so we've collected the full $500,000 from the state, which is great. And the project's wrapped up, and it's been closed out.
Check that box. Well done.
And that's all I had to report on the information office.
Dublin. So, Dublin Santa Ramona Services District is not doing the purchasing of the chemicals. Do you know who's going to, what city or town or organization might take that on?
You know, they were doing the administration of the public bid process, right, for the bulk chemicals used by water wastewater agencies on a regional basis. They have new managers and staff there. They decided that maybe they wanted to get out of the administration business of doing that. So that's been accepted by BACWA.
Yep.
So BACWA will be handling that now in the future. And we get an annual bill from BACWA. And there's various line items, so that will just be a new line item on the bill, and it will represent, you know, the administrative costs for the particular number of chemicals that we purchase.
Weren't we paying Dublin Santa Ramona?
Yeah.
So is it the same amount? Is the fee similar?
We're assuming. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't know. If the fee increases significantly, then we reevaluate participation.
Okay.
But we don't, you know, BACWA is just, it's a GPA of member, you know, wastewater agencies. So they're there just charging to recover their actual costs, mm-hmm, doing business. Same as Dublin Santa Ramona was.
Right.
So I'm assuming that they're just going to use all the template documents that Dublin Santa Ramona developed and just move the program forward. And Dave Williams, you know, the exec director of BACWA. He's a competent, really, you know, intelligent fellow.
Okay.
Very directed. Okay, item 11, the North Bay Watershed Association report.
North Bay Watershed. Really kind of cool stuff is happening up there. I'll keep it brief. First of all, you should have received an email this afternoon to the North Bay Watershed Association quarterly newsletter. Listen, this is part of their new strategic plan, is we're doing all this cool stuff, and nobody knew anything about what we were doing other than I try to report back a little bit. This is what they're doing and what all the other agencies are doing, and it's quite cool. So I encourage you to take a look at that. We talked more about the strategic plan this last time. Plus, we had the meeting at the Napa Sanitation Agency up there on Sulco Road. And we learned a couple of very cool things. Are you familiar with Napa at all? You know where the movie theater is up there? That's where the old sanitation plant was. And it's been there for 1,000 years, and the city wasn't getting anything out of that. And so there was a developer who owns some land off of Saco Road, and they made an agreement. Give us the land at where the Napa theaters are. We'll build you, to your specifications, a whole new sanitation agency off of Soco Road. When we're done with it, signed off, and it's running, give us the land, and we'll develop it. Which is a win-win for everybody. Napa got a brand new sanitation district out of the deal, and Napa is collecting a ton of taxes off of hotels, off of theaters, off of gymnasiums, restaurants, and everything. So that was a real win-win situation. They're much like us. They do their own collections also, which we don't. But they're generating biogas. They're producing less of their electricity than we are, although they do have solar panels as you go in that is producing a megawatt a year. I don't recall the number, but they're producing a lot. They have
they didn't mention it. Tesla gave them those batteries. They have a huge bank of Tesla batteries to store energy that they're not using right now, to use it at a later date. And Tesla, when they developed those kinds of batteries, they needed somewhere to test them, and they made a deal. So I think they got those batteries for free. The next meeting, which I will let you know, it's the first Friday, is going to be a tour. One of the things we invested in was reoking after the fire. When the fires roared through over the last few years, the reaction was, let's plant. Whatever it is, green everything up with whatever grows the fastest. And there was a giant timeout. Everybody stop. There's a reason that it was Oakland, Thousand Oaks, Oakville, Oak Forest. California was full of oaks and Monterey pines and redwoods. All this other stuff is non-indigenous. And they said, before we plant, maybe it would be a good idea to plant oaks. And so they did a study, we invested in it, and they're re-oaking. And so the October, which is the first Friday, and I'll get it out to everybody, you're all welcome to come, is to go see the first big project of re-oaking up in Sonoma County. And it should be pretty interesting. And, Jason and Steve attended the last meeting, and that was nice.
It's nice to know that you care about reoking.
It's important.
I think it's a karaoke kid.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God.
Okay, moving on. The oral reports by commissioners and the general manager. Any
action reports?
Okay, hearing none. I have a quick question. The Marin Transit should be moving in shortly. They've got everything ready to go. Is there an update on that?
Yeah, you know, that's, I was going to tell you the status to you, that's not even my work plan, but I'll tell you since you brought it up. So so all the site improvements have been completed. They've reimbursed us for the land appraisal. We're preparing, you know, an invoice for all the materials and costs for the site improvements that we'll send to them in the near future. And they're planning to bring their buses and drivers over on Sunday the 22nd to give them a little training. And then they're going to start operating out of our corporation yard on the 23rd of this month.
Great.
Yeah. I just have a few things real quick. So on recruitments, so we hired a new operator in training, Claire Ernst. She started end of August, so she's being trained right now. She's doing great, I heard. A new environmental service analyst, Kyle Carvajal, starts on the 17th of this month. We're conducting this focused, institutional utility labor recruitment, looking at just trying to hire people from San Rafael, in particular the canal area. And we've been keeping, the key staff people at the Canal Community Alliance, aware of the status of the program. So once, that contract amendment was approved by the board with CDCR, we had funding in there to bring on the three new staff members. We let them know. We sent them the advertisement, the job description, and we also just advertised in the Marin IJ, and we kind of limited our advertisements. And we had a one-month open period, and we received four applications.
That's three jobs?
Three jobs. And, two of them are from, two out of the county, one's from Point Reyes, and one's from San Rafael. None were from the Community Alliance. So, of course, I contacted, this list of people at the Alliance and said, hey, what happened? Nobody applied, for the job. Any additional outreach you can do? And I received a response from another person, at the Alliance. I was on the email that said he's just been hired. He helps with people finding jobs. So I sent everything back to him. We decided internally, since we only had four applicants and only one from San Rafael, that we would extend the recruitment period till August, September 13th. And then we also recruited, on our website and in Craigslist and Indeed.
Craigslist and Indeed, yeah. Craigslist, we haven't had any.
Yeah. So right now we have 14 applicants, and we have about 99 people from Indeed that we received the resumes, but only a couple of those people actually read the whole advertisement where it says you have to submit an application also, CMSA job application. So once it closes on the 13th, we may take a look at that list of people from Indeed and to see who's from San Rafael and decide maybe we reach out to them separately and just inform them, take a look at the advertisement. If you're interested in the job, fill out the CMSA job app and send it in. then we'll do initial review and screening of the applications and interview some folks. So that's kind of the status of that. Then Amy Huang, you guys know Amy? She's resigned.
Right after she won that award?
Well, you know, she lives outside downtown Oakland, mm-hmm. and a job opened up in East Bay Mud. Mm-hmm. And it's a very similar job, you know, slight pay reduction, but she said it's less than 10 minutes from her house on BART. Mm-hmm. And she says it takes her an hour and a half sometimes to get to CMSA.
Yeah, the bridge is terrible.
Yeah, so she really complimented all the people she's worked with in the agency, and she was tougher and decided to leave. But her and I talked for like 45 minutes. It was a great conversation, but I fully understand, you know, and we wish her the best. Then lastly, almost as important as that, is legal counsel Jack Govey is retiring in March of 2020. So we got to figure out succession for Jack. And then the exciting thing, Ross Valley is using our recycled water as dust control out at their Larkspur Landing site remediation project. So that was, we got approval from the water board to use this water for dust control. So that's exciting. And last, the cogen engine was started up. Yeah. No problem yesterday. It ran on natural gas for most of today. Then we shut it off, and we're going to start it up on biogas tomorrow, tune it up, and have it run in just like a baseline mode of operation for a few days. Then we'll move it to the load following operation. So that's great.
Good job.
Yeah, a lot of great staff.
I think you should get a resolution together for the member agencies so their councils can pass and give Jack Govey Day in March 2020 by all the member agencies.
Yeah, we'll definitely have a resolution of appreciation for Jack. That's good.
We could have a cupcake or something.
We could have an Impossible Burger night.
Yeah. Well, done that. Mission Impossible.
Okay, too. Thanks.
We'll get the Kentucky Fried Chicken. The Impossible Chicken.
The next scheduled meeting is Tuesday, October 8th.
I'm serious about the resolution.
Okay, yeah, I noted it. Yes.
We can go closed session.
And then we are going to go into closed session for a public employee performance evaluation.